The Around the NFL podcast does not endorse picking up mysterious hitchhikers.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
I thought I'd let you guys down on Sunday at the top of the show.
You did.
Oh, I didn't even say why.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Fair enough.
When you couldn't hide your disappointment about the Patriots winning and you said they were ruining football, that part?
That is something I believe in. In fact, I have launched an outright war against the
You're
Patriots.
You're digging in on that. I like it.
Yes. Remember this now. The war has begun. Me against the Pats. Cancel the Pats. Save football.
Sure. Bill Belichick's shaking in his boots right now.
I like
you know what?
Cancel them.
What, you know, Wes just jumping from lily pad to lily pad. Cardinals, Patriots.
Carry that water.
Some of us stay loyal to the team that we fell in love
with. It's a good story. You know, lone blogger versus multi-million-dollar, you know, billion-dollar NFL
entity.
This isn't
like the fourth season of Ed. You can't just cancel it. You can't just eliminate them as a series.
An Ed ref. All right. I like it. Anyway, the Patriots, I'm coming for you. Watch out. Don't know what I'm going to do yet. It's going to be big, though, and it's going to change everything. But I wanted to apologize about Sunday. I should have had for a new season, some new slogans for the NFL. So on the way back from the restroom before the show, I just...
Glad you brought this up because we've gotten a lot of tweets about
this.
So we don't know what to say, so you can do it for us.
Here we go. And you guys, as always, let me know honestly how you feel about them.
Okay.
The NFL will never be stopped.
Little sinister.
Wes?
I mean, it's a little bit like the Patriots.
Okay, so that's a bad one. All right, that one's.
I feel like you're throwing that one out early to almost set. You got to have the better ones later. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. The NFL. We stand for the national anthem. Or sit. Whatever you think is the right way is pretty cool by us. Cover everything. Everybody's happy.
I mean, it feels accurate to me.
I would run that by RG3 to see if that's an acceptable slogan. He tends to be an expert on these issues.
Kicking him in while he's down.
Wow.
I like that one.
If you're going to slogan here, you're going to have to run it by RG3. Yeah.
All right, final one, and this one kind of ties into the first one I threw out there because I think it's important, but maybe I didn't quite hit on it. Maybe I haven't. And I want you to keep in mind Mark Cuban's comments about the NFL a couple of years ago. The NFL, hog to slaughter? More like hog heaven.
I think that's a winner.
That one is – that sticks.
Is that like a shot at Mark Cuban?
Well, it's in reference to Cuban's comments that you think the NFL is getting too big for itself and will eventually bring the whole organization down. This slogan saying, yeah, well, deal with it. Not going to happen.
Works on a lot of levels. You know, a reference – not a really a reference, but, you know, the Hogs, they were a great offensive line. I'm a big fan of pork products in general. Like, I love it. So Hogs slaughtered, that makes me happy.
Pairs up well with the generally gluttonous nature of the entire country right now.
There you go.
Really proves my long-running theory that you are, in fact, smarter than Mark Cuban.
Well, I don't have his money, so I think he's way smarter. But, all right, I'll keep at it, though, but it's off to a decent start.
I like the Hog Heaven one.
You're off to a start. We don't need to categorize what kind of start you're off to.
Okay. Today's podcast, which is sponsored by no one, of course, and I don't see a sponsor coming anytime soon.
No.
We exist essentially in a vacuum, but we have you, the listeners, to thank for, by the way, making our week one recap show our highest downloaded show ever. So we have support from outside the building. That's the main thing.
We appreciate it. I think you guys have been listening to comments on iTunes and telling your friends. It has really got some momentum, so we have you to thank. Thank you very much.
Today's show is a good one because we're going to talk about the Monday Night Football games, which maybe weren't great games, but listen, talking football, that's fun. I like to talk football with the boys, Greg. You know that.
You made that clear
during
the division previews. Like, you like it, but only up to a certain point.
Well, this I'm not past the line yet. We're going to do some news. We're going to hit the Thursday night preview with a big AFC East matchup between the Jets and Bills. And then, yes, it will be time for our Team of ATL nominations. Team of ATL. And we'll get into exactly what that means when the time comes at the end of the show. But before we do that, let's talk Monday Night Football, which featured two games, Chris Wessling. And let's start off, let's do it in the order in which they were played. in D.C. or just outside it. The Redskins coming off a very nice season where they got to the playoffs, won the division. Now welcome a big boy into the town, one of the two percenters of the NFL, the Pittsburgh Steelers. And it doesn't look pretty at the end of four quarters. The Steelers dominate on both sides of the ball, a 38-16 win.
I thought at one point, I wondered if Kirk Cousins and Big Ben were even playing the same sport. They play quarterbacks so opposite of each other. Big Ben is so aggressive, so fun, so willing to take chances. And Kirk Cousins is a check down machine. His ball location was off, and Big Ben's ball location is always on. I just thought the Steelers were toying with the Redskins. Even when the game was close, or even when the Redskins had the lead, the Steelers were kind of shooting themselves in the foot, and you figured, all right, this is going to end up being a blowout anyway.
When the Redskins didn't take advantage of moving the ball early, and it felt like they were the better team in terms of moving the ball in the first quarter, we both said to each other watching the game here, Wes, this is going to be a blowout. Kirk Cousins was playing so poorly that John Gruden, feeling for his brother on the sideline, was making sounds of pain and anguish going, ugh, you know, after certain decisions. He was basically saying, go throw the ball deep. You have so much time in the pocket. There was very little pass rush from the Steelers, and yet he was still checking it down or panicking, not running, not going for big plays. And you're right. The aggressive team going for it on fourth down paid off.
I thought that a very big turning point in this game came early when Ryan Kerrigan was unable to recover that fumble. I have watched enough Steelers games where
give Marcus Pouncey credit for that.
Absolutely. You get them on the ropes in the first quarter, and somehow Pittsburgh, and it's because of the cohesiveness that you got, Big Ben knows his players so well, that they dig themselves out of any hole, and it never seems to affect Ben Roethlisberger mentally. He just marches right back. The minute they didn't, had the Redskins jumped on that, and they would have probably had a touchdown a couple plays later. It is a different game at that point.
See, I agree with that. Was a huge point in the game, but these teams looked like they were just on such different levels that I don't think it would have made a big difference.
Why did the Redskins do well?
Right. One more point about Kirk Cousins, a totally lost game for that guy. And I thought at the moment, I think it was either late in the third or in the fourth quarter when they showed, and they still were clinging to life, and they were around the 20-30 yard line heading towards the end zone. And he has that wide open on the three-man rush, and he doesn't take the easy first down and more. Instead, he just sails it out of bounds to settle for a field goal. It was almost like he was a rookie again. And you're thinking, who is this guy that's getting paid $20 million this year?
Well, you know why he got the franchise tag instead of a long-term deal. He still, in his entire career, has not beaten a good football team.
A winning team, not even once. And the Redskins were very hesitant and very decisive about not giving him long-term money. And, you know, I've been saying on this podcast, I kind of expect him to turn back into a pumpkin. Not like he's going to have nights like this all season, but that is just going to be one of those middle-of-the-road 22 to 28 in the league, not a guy that's going to necessarily win you games. The best thing about this team is DeSean Jackson and, in theory, the wide receiver group. But other than that, there's not a lot that excites me about the defense, even with Josh Norman there.
On the Steelers side, D'Angelo Williams went nuts, 33 years old, and ran for, I believe, 146 yards in this game or something close to that. And Antonio Brown, almost a ho-hum game for him, but still, what is it, 8 for 130 and 2 touchdowns?
Well,
the guy is an absolute monster.
Including one of the most beautiful catches we're going to see all season on a pretty throw from Big Ben. And everyone on Twitter and during the broadcast asking, why on earth you sign Josh Norman for the money you do and don't have him shadow Antonio Brown? And, you know, the defensive coordinator of the Redskins, like it or not, made it very clear that they trust Breland and they were not going to have Norman go all over the field because he didn't do that in Carolina. But I don't think it matters at all. Antonio Brown can devastate any coverage he's up against. He is an incredible athlete.
I'm ready to take Julio Jones and Odell Beckham out of the conversation. Antonio Brown's the best receiver.
Absolutely.
I agree, and I think D'Angelo Hall, who has moved to safety, was at fault for some of those big plays, not getting over in time. He's at a new position. I think they wanted him behind Breland being the guy over the top, and he was never there in time to the point where he wasn't even in the shot, and you just thought it's all Breland all the time.
Antonio Brown has hit that rarefied air, and that's the decision coaching staffs have to make. They say, do we trust our number one corner to take on a number one receiver one-on-one, or do we move him to the other side and then have a corner safety try to cover the number one guy? And they respect Josh Norman. Obviously, they gave him a ton of money, but they just don't think he's good enough to cover that guy. To cover Antonio Antonio Brown in 2016.
Nobody. I mean,
you got to be
Sherman
young Revis. You got to be Deion Sanders in his prime. That's at the level I think this guy's playing the position.
I totally agree. And before we leave this game, can we talk about fourth down mentality a little bit? Bill Belichick, who, when he's asked a legitimate football question, gives the best answers of any coach. Tom Curran of CSN New England asked him about timeouts and fourth downs. And Belichick said, you guys always think it comes down to situation, fourth and one, fourth and two, what yard line you're on. He said, honestly, the decision usually is how confident do I feel about the play call.
Right.
And you could see the mentality that Tomlin and Big Ben are ready to go on fourth down every time. And John Gruden looks like a deer in the headlights. How do you pass up fourth and one at your own 40-yard line, and then a quarter later, at fourth and six on your own 40-yard line, you go for it because you saw Tomlin do it?
And when Tomlin was asked about it, he said very simply, we play to win. And that's why the Steelers are so fun to watch. It is amazing to think that they are missing Martavis Bryant, Le'Veon Bell, Heath Miller's retired, Ladarius Green is out of the picture, and it doesn't matter.
Well,
Todd Haley has turned into one of the – I mean
– Eli Rogers looks really good.
He looked good. Jesse James, I thought. I mean, yep. You talk about a guy that came in. He is a huge tight end. They had 11 catches between them. And other teams do not operate this way. The Steelers have the most physical camp of any team in the league, and they are aggressive from the summer on out. And the minute they hit the field, I don't care where you came from, if someone's not in there, you're going to play. And other teams, if you lose the equivalent of a Le'Veon Bell and a Martavis Bryant, you have an excuse to go 1-4 to start the season. Pittsburgh does not operate that way.
Now let's move on to the late game. And I actually got audio of the scene inside Los Angeles Rams headquarters after their first game back in L.A. in 21 years. Let's listen to it. It was that bad.
That's where we are.
They go to San Francisco or Santa Clara, to clarify. And they get shut out by the San Francisco 49ers, who I believe are number 31 in our preseason power rankings, in the 30 to 32 range in everyone's power rankings. And you could say, oh, yeah, that doesn't matter. The 49ers can be good. But no, the 49ers aren't going to be good this year. The Rams were that bad. One of the most dreadful Mark Sessler performances I've seen in a long time in a primetime stage. And for it to happen in week one, coming off a hard knock season, coming in your first game back in L.A. I know they weren't playing in L.A., but the first game with all the eyes of America saying, oh, here are the new Rams. It could not have been worse for Jeff Fisher.
Yeah, I feel like I called the Rams the team that had the most depressing preseason, because you go out and you think you've saved the franchise by finally going and getting a quarterback versus passing on quarterbacks over and over. And he's on street clothes on your sideline, while the starter from the Super Bowl against the Ravens is on the other sideline. Meanwhile, we're treated to Blaine Gabbert and Case Keenum, and we got the product we thought we'd get when you're watching those two quarterbacks play each other. The Rams were putrid.
As I watch this wretched dismantling at the hands of a poor 49ers squad, it dawned on me why Jeff Fisher's 7-9 speech in Hard Knocks rankled me so much, didn't get any buy-in from his players, and actually had his players laughing during the speech.
Right.
Let's hear it from Irish one time here.
I'm not going 7-9 or 8-8 or 9-7 or 10-6 for that matter. This team's too talented. I'm not going to settle for that. Okay? I know what I'm doing.
Such a tough situation now, because you did go out of your way to stick your chest out and say all that mediocrity stops here, and then you have your worst game in your 5 years there.
It was a hollow speech, and here's why. You've heard of the saying, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. Bill Belichick has a tried and true formula for getting to the AFC Championship game. Pete Carroll, tried and true formula for getting the Seahawks to the playoffs. Jeff Fisher has a tried and true formula for going 7-9 every year. And what he did was he came into camp with a roster that was much worse than the one that went 7-9 last year. And he stood up in front of these guys and said, hey, we're not going to go 7-9. Meanwhile, he knows that Jared Goff's not ready because he saw him in OTAs. He knows that his offensive line is the same offensive line that couldn't open any holes for Todd Gurley in the second half of last season. He knows his wide receiver core has been the laughingstock of the NFL for a half decade. He knows that his defense lost Chris Long, James Laurinaitis, Janoris Jenkins, Rodney McLeod, and didn't pick up any impact players. And with this roster, which is much worse, he stood up in front of everyone and says, I'm not going 7-9 anymore. No wonder why his players didn't buy in.
Do we think that Jeff Fisher might be quickly and more quickly than people realize could be heading towards a hot butt?
I think if this season went down in flames, then yes, at the end of the year. I don't think they're going to look at anyone on this staff or any advantage in firing him during this season. We don't know the details on the extension he got. A lot of times these extensions are one-year extensions. Tom Coughlin would get that all the time. Owners will deal with eating that one extra year. That is uncomfortable. We are used to this from the Rams.
Pipe down, Jeff. Greg's trying to make a point.
We are used to this from the Rams, though. They are the most up-and-down team in the league, and we don't like to recognize the ups because it's not that fun to watch. Like, they had that stretch a couple years ago where they won two games back-to-back, 76-0. That same season, they lost week one 34-6. So they'll put up stink bombs, and it's kind of Fisher's MO that they'll show up this week against Seattle. They'll probably play well. I don't know if they'll win this week, but they'll probably be competitive against the Seahawks. But it is unbelievable. Out of 32 quarterbacks, Blaine Gabbert was 31st in yards per attempt in the NFL this week, and they lost 28-0. Of course, Case Keenum was the guy who was number 32. They lost 28-0 to the team that had the 31st quarterback, and it was the dead last team in our power poll, by the way, Dan Hanley.
Wow.
Well, when it comes to the Rams, they're one of the teams, you know, pre-drafting Goff that said, we think we can build a team without a pristine top five quarterback. We can go defense. But the problem is, what happens to a defense? We've seen this typically with Chip Kelly's defenses. When your time of possession is non-existent, when you're the Rams, you're punting 8 out of 9 possessions. You're on the field for 3 plays a drive. Your defense is going to be what Aaron Donald was by the end of the game, extremely frustrated.
I thought that was the nadir of the entire Jeff Fisher era when Donald slammed his helmet down and walked off the field as they were getting blown out. Let's turn over and look at the other side of this. So the 49ers, who listen, after being told they were the worst team in football or close to it all through the offseason, shut out a team that's obviously having issues right now. But, Wes, is there any reason from what you saw in that game to think that the 49ers may be better than what people have thought about them?
Well, I would say this. They want to run the ball and stop the run. And the Rams fancy themselves as a smash-mouth ball-control team with a dominant front seven.
They outrammed the Rams.
They dominated the line of scrimmage. They bullied the Rams. And if you're looking for something positive from the 49ers, before you go into Carolina to face the Panthers this week,
they have a brutal schedule.
That's the positive that I would take away. What they want to do, they did.
Carlos Hyde's, some of his quick movement to make people miss in the hole were unbelievable. I know the numbers weren't insane like they were last year.
Good.
He looked like a special back, and they don't have much going on offense, and that's why I don't think they're going to really go anywhere this year. But even before the game, we're talking about, I think their defensive talent in the front seven, and maybe even including the whole defense, is pretty good. I think it's better than average. I think they can be a better than average top 10 to 14 type of defense, and that's an improvement from where they were last year, and they can be competitive.
There was a moment where they had a field-level view, and you just saw players for how big and tall and large they really were.
Oh, their defensive linemen are
absolutely
monsters.
Eric Armstead and DeForest Buckner, 2 6-foot-7-plus dudes standing there as your bookends. That is the makings of a good defense.
Bowman is back, too. Navarro, yeah. Bowman's all the way back.
And, yes, credit to the 49ers for playing well or playing way better than their competition. But that was still one of the worst games that I've ever watched in prime time. It was very hard to sit through, and not just because Chris Berman was a play-by-play guy. This, to me, was by far the most exciting point of the game when an idiot ran on the field.
Hey, somebody has run out on the field. Some goofball in a hat and a red shirt. Now he takes off the shirt. He's running down the middle by the 50. He's at the 30. He's bare-chested and banging his chest. Now he runs the opposite way. He runs at the 50. He runs at the 40. The guy is drunk, but there he goes.
The guy is
20.
Drunk.
They're chasing him. They're not going to get him. Waving his arms, bare-chested. Somebody stop
Look
that
out.
Man.
Here comes the blue coat.
Oh, they got him.
Here comes
They're coming
the blue
from the
coat.
Left. Oh, and they tackle him at the 40-yard line.
That was great.
That was the most exciting thing to happen tonight.
That's Kevin Harlan of Westwood One, and it was one of the all-time calls, because I also like, and I wrote about this on the end around, which you could check out, is that Well, the telecast immediately pans away, and it's like, we don't want to give that lunatic the credit or respect to show what he's doing. Harlan just embraced the ridiculousness of it, and also in a way, in a subversive way, kind of was sticking it to the Rams and 49ers to a lesser extent.
It was great.
Delivering such a stinker of a game.
Yeah, well, we don't want to subject viewers to pain. How about watching Case Keenum go four and out to end the game to have a shutout for the 14th straight drive?
As we're learning, radio is much more interesting than television. And Kevin Harlan...
It's the future!
Kevin Harlan loves life, and I got so much joy out of listening to that because it's something in his mind clicked, which was in such contrast to Chris Berman that said, oh, well, there's a person on the field. And then it's shift away and small talk, and Berman doesn't know where he is or what's happening.
I think Damashek is a better Berman than you, by the way.
No, I don't do a Berman, but I mean...
Your Berman's like an aristocrat. Oh, there's someone on the
Well, it is. That was the attitude. Oh, no, we couldn't possibly expose the viewer to this malarkey, but it's like, give me a break. Harlan just went down the great road.
I will never forget that call, especially when he goes, and the guy is drunk.
It's like, and he's bare-chested.
Some goofball in a hat.
All right.
I've got a whole thing on Jeff Fisher and quarterbacks, but we can save it for the Rams preview probably. But I would just say that nobody in America or around the world who watches football should ever again believe a word Jeff Fisher says about quarterbacks.
Fair enough. Irish, let's do some news.
This is how it's done in Orange County. Welcome to the OC,
Nice work, Irish. They dropped in a promo...
Phantom Planet.
Yes, Phantom Planet before the Rams game, a band that has not been heard from since 2003. We'd play you a sample of the song, but that's no longer permitted.
Once Phantom Planet open up for Elvis Costello, little known fact.
Very good.
That is not as only a little known fact, that is potentially not podcast material.
Favorite Elvis Costello song?
So overrated, Costello.
Oh, give me a break. Listen to Shipbuilding and tell me he's overrated.
I love 45, which is a newish.
Let's talk football and start with this is the factory of sadness stuff, Mark. The Cleveland Browns have placed Robert Griffin III on injured reserve. This after he suffered a left shoulder injury in the season opener against the Eagles. And just to put a button on it, and we don't know if he's done for the year, the new IR rules allow the Browns some wiggle room here, but there's certainly a chance we won't see him again. It seemed like a pretty serious injury with a fracture involved. But, Mark, it was just something so cosmically depressing about the Browns here that they, on the day that they lose to the rookie quarterback that they passed on after they signed RG3, he beats him in a game. Everyone's excited about that rookie and your RG3 investment. And let's look at it. They said this guy is not just a patch. We think he could be the next guy. He ends up hurt like everyone kind of expected.
Well, one thing about RG3 first, I understand that he's the easy butt of jokes, you know, league-wide on some level, but his teammates voted him captain this year, and they talked about a different type of player, and there wasn't a single negative thing that came out of RG3 during the offseason or now. He couldn't have been more committed, and whether that's the right decision at quarterback or not, I don't think it is, and I think if anything from a football angle, Josh McCown gives you just as much of a chance to win games, but more than that, Cleveland needs to stop toying around the way that the Rams have done previously and put all their sights on getting the best draftable quarterback they can. And really anything in the way of that, in my opinion, is wasted time. So it's not an RG3 thing, but let's get to the bottom of this. You don't have a quarterback with or without RG3. There's no way to mix that message up. You've got to go find that still.
I don't see this as a factory of sadness fallout in any way. I think it saved Hugh Jackson from his pet project, who looked lost in his first start with the Browns.
It's sad for RG3.
I agree,
like, in terms of the win losses from the Browns, but from a personal angle, a guy that, you know, we debated, should he win Rookie of the Year? Should Andrew Luck? Who's going to have the better career not that long ago? And to have this sort of second chance, which we never really saw coming. We did not think he was going to get a chance to start in the NFL. Again, for it to go out like this, when all they talked about all offseason was avoiding big hits, and for the most part, he really did in this game, and yet, you know, I think it was a little bit of bad luck, and I think it was a little bit of saving the Browns because of what Wes said, he was the worst quarterback in the league, I think, this week.
Well, not Case Keenum?
No, that's not fair, Greg.
They put him in a different category.
That's not fair because RG3, at least, the only thing they do well is test the field deep, and he did it all preseason. He did it in week one.
I blacked out that memory. I really was I was thinking of it after the Sunday games. He missed five or six throws, not by a little bit, and that was even when he was protected well. It was not an encouraging week one performance from Griffin.
And this from day one, this was – to me, a puzzling signing because, number one, he couldn't play anymore, and number two, he always gets hurt. So what did we see in the very first game? He couldn't play, and then he got hurt.
Well,
so why should anybody be surprised that this happened?
No one should. And league executives, you know, this, of course, comes out the minute RG3 gets hurt. Is, you know, this league executive said he knew it wouldn't work, and this guy said he knew it wouldn't work. And listen, that's fair because Cleveland, you have to go back to 2001 is the last time they had not even a good quarterback, but a quarterback start 16 games. They have had a long and insane history of drafting too small, too brittle, and not enough durable quarterbacks. These guys have gotten hurt every season.
And another one of them is Josh McCown, and that's where this season...
He'll give you three games, and he's going to
be
hurt.
It could get depressing because you have Case Keenum sitting
there. Get depressing?
Get more depressing if Case Keenum goes out there and you have to watch 11 games of Case Keenum and he's not ready at all. It just feels like
Cody Kessler.
Rally.
Stop thinking about Case Keenum so much.
Well, Mark, back to the executives. I can't remember a quarterback in all the years I've been watching football who has been more disparaged and maligned by undisclosed executive and scouts who almost every time say this guy has to basically put his ego aside. That's almost always the compliment or the comment on RG3. And if you hear it that many times, maybe there's something to it.
Oh, I don't doubt that there is. This was never a project that I think any one of us in this room said, this is going to turn into wins. This was a patch. I don't care who's in there. It is a patch. The team is not ready for a quarterback anyways. And by the way,
they were publicly saying that was not the case.
I understand that. Teams publicly say a lot of things. And I think that you're talking about a head coach that his ego is tied up in this too.
He wanted to make this work. At that level of football, don't you have to talk yourself into it?
You have to believe. You can't go into a season and say, actually, we all think that we have the worst quarterback here. Whether it's lip service and whether what we're being told doesn't matter. I think inside the building that Hugh Jackson did believe that for now, until they had the answer, they could do something with RG3. Yes, I do.
You don't get to that point unless you believe in things that are unlikely. It's unlikely Hugh Jackson would ever be an NFL head coach. It's unlikely Robert Griffin III would ever be an NFL star. It's like you have to have an unbelievable belief in yourself to get to that point. If nothing else, that was the one positive I took from Jared Goff in Hard Knocks. Nothing was shaking that guy's confidence. I mean, he was whether there was anything was happening or not, that guy believes in himself. At least he had that.
But here's what's on paper. Yeah. Here's the problem, because when it's April and we're talking about all these teams and their strategies and it's these wonderful glowing articles about what Team X is going to do and how they're going to do it, then the games start and we start to realize, oh, there's still about six or seven teams in the league that mean business and the rest are figuring it out. And if you're Cleveland on paper right now, you're the team that said Carson Wentz is not the kind of quarterback we want. Jared Goff might have been, and RG3 was. So if you're a fan, you're wondering, wait a minute, who's making these decisions? And
why is
this
regime any better than the previous eight?
You'll have that...
I think they're more organized, but that doesn't mean that you have to pick players. You look at the Steelers. You have to have star players and depth behind them. Cleveland has neither right now.
I hope that preseason quarter and a half or whatever it was isn't the highlight of the season, though. You know, it's a long 16 weeks.
Greg, Browns fans know this season is essentially over. I mean, that's how every Browns season is.
I think there's a lot to be said for a kind of sophisticated fan who knows when a team is in rebuilding mode and knows that the future is what's worth getting excited about. And hey, look, let's see if we can find promising things this season. Let's see if Corey Coleman becomes a stud. Let's see if Terrell Pryor can be an actual NFL starter. Those kind, you know, Carl Nassib, these are the things to look for, not actual wins and losses.
Right. They may have found some players. Let's look at the positive, but it's not. It can be wins and losses.
And let's move on and talk about the Saints, who have finally cut the cord on running back C.J. Spiller, who signed a four-year, $16 million deal last March. March of 2015, was not healthy and seemed to be in the doghouse perhaps in his first season, and then got he did not play. He was inactive for week one this week, so the writing was on the wall that Spiller was not going to be a part of the Saints' plans. Wes, my question, there was a lot of positive buzz, I thought, about C.J. Spiller this summer, and then all of a sudden, now he's unemployed.
I would even go back to last year. I thought this was the perfect fit for C.J. Spiller with Sean Payton, who uses his running backs in the receiving game really well. Last year, you write off because of an August knee surgery, ruins his whole season. This year, May, Sean Payton says C.J. Spiller is noticeably different. Hmm. He's back. And then he's a game day active after in preseason they use him with the first team offense.
In the third preseason game. In the
Well, maybe it's a final look
him.
Now.
He's running out played there well. Before Mark Ingram in a third preseason game. And then Travers Cadet's playing over him in the first game. There's got to be something else going on. But at this point, I think I've pretty much given up hope that we're going to see, like, difference-making C.J. Spiller ever again.
Something stinks here.
Yeah.
And it happens more with the Saints in terms of their transactions than just about any team in the league. They do not do a good job running their personnel. I think Sean Payton has way more influence, you know, on everything going on in that organization than Denounce. And they don't get it. They don't get a lot of heat for giving C.J. Spiller all this guaranteed money. I think the reason they cut him after week one was his money was all guaranteed anyways. It was flushed down the toilet. So it didn't matter whether he was cut after training camp or now.
Well, and to Dan's point about what teams are saying publicly, Sean Payton last year essentially cajoled me into writing a Josh Hill making the leap piece based on what he was saying publicly about certain players.
I thought it was unfair when he called you up about it.
All right. But then, you know, it's the same thing. All these teams have to spin the message and have to spin hope until the games start. And now it's like, listen, give me a break. After all they said about C.J. Spiller and how especially before they signed him, this is the ideal running back I would have carved out of stone for my Sean Payton offense. And then, bang, he's gone.
Their veteran free agent signings are among the worst in the entire league. That said, I would like to see him turn up on the old New England Patriots. I feel like that would be nice.
Craig.
Well, up to the two percenters.
I feel like that would be a nice little.
That would be a great fit.
That's what I'm saying.
I would love to see
them. Be roommates with Barkevious Mingo.
They need it.
You guys, it's not just you. Everyone falls into the trap. Any free agent that washes out, immediately the rule has to be, oh, what about on the Patriots?
Yeah.
It doesn't always work. We've seen it.
Chris Long looked pretty damn good in the opener.
Chad Johnson.
Chad Johnson cost them a Super Bowl.
Belichick's the coach that will trade 25 times a season and acquire people for 2 weeks and dump them. I mean, he's more active than other teams are.
We got Bishop Sankey on the practice squad.
That's what's happening in the news. Guys, if you'd humor me, I know you do often on the show, or, you know, have some patience with me. Monday night was the first Monday night football game without Mike Tirico in several years. If you guys just give me some time to process this.
Okay.
I know you think that I shouldn't still love you or tell you that. But if I didn't say it, well, I'd still have felt it. Where's the sense in that? I promise I'm not trying to make your life harder or return to where we were. But I will go down with this ship, and I won't put my hands up and surrender. There will be no white flag above my door. I'm in love. And always will be. I know I left too much.
Dan,
yeah.
Still going.
What?
I think hit the end of this. Okay. Thank you, though.
You know that I famously have ranked the greatest breakup songs in history. That's in the top 100.
Wow.
Well, that's why I didn't know that, Wes. I knew that you had the list, and you should point the listeners.
Oh, you can
and
find it on
base.
Spotify. Greatest yeah. breakup songs under my Chris Wessling on Spotify.
I'm sure it's a great list, but that was for me to Mike.
Well, you really caught. I don't know that song. I have to admit.
Really?
What?
Am I crazy?
Greg was born at age 32.
You don't know that
sometime
song?
In 2003.
It started sounding familiar towards the end, but I didn't know what it was.
No. Well, maybe it was.
But that's beside the point. My point was, I didn't need to know it to really – Dan really captured the emotion of it. He really got to the emotional core.
Thanks.
That was a meeker Dan Hansis than I'm used to.
I'm hurt. It was not the same as Sean McDonough, who's a very capable broadcaster.
He did great.
He's capable.
It's funny.
Well,
give him some time.
I think the point is you can do great, and Mike Tirico is just going to do a little bit more. I think missing Tirico is sort of a
give him some time. You're gonna always you're not going to like the new teacher or the new coach or the new quarterback after the great one leaves right away, and then after a while you'll realize, wow.
I'm not saying I can't love again, but I'm just not ready yet. Let's talk Thursday Night Football. Another love of mine, the New York Jets, traveling to Orchard Park to face the Buffalo Bills. Color rush night, Mark.
Ugh.
It's exciting.
I
mean, as long as
that?
You, if you're not colorblind, you're fine in this matchup.
I like PFT wrote a banger today, like, whoa, with the NFL, color rush is all about, yeah, green. Well, yeah, of course, it's about money. They're trying to make money with more jerseys. Greg, you used to work for PFT. Come on. Can you make a phone call? Get that one taken down.
Breaking, capitalist organization. Out to make money.
Anyway, so this is a game of two desperate teams. The Jets, bad loss against the Bengals that they should not have lost that game. The Bills, no, they just lost a game to the Baltimore Ravens in which their offense looked feeble. So now both these teams looking to avoid going 0-2. But, Mark, the argument that I have is that the Jets is a better team with a killer schedule in the next 4 weeks. This is more important to them because they feel like a team that could be a playoff team if things go the right way. But if you get in an 0-2 hole, you're in deep trouble.
If you lose this game, then your task is to go over the next month, play the Chiefs, the Seahawks, the Steelers, and the Cardinals. And I don't think that the New York Jets got rid of Rex Ryan to bring in a new regime that would go 0-3 in their first games against Rex Ryan in a rather vanilla Bills team. So, yes, I think, you know, with the way that New York operates and New York hovers around the Jets and Giants, if they go 0-2 and this is how it happens, there are going to be some problems.
Of course they could go 0-2. It's not like they're heavy favorites. But watching that Jets-Bengals game, I thought the Jets looked really good. They dominated on both sides of the line of scrimmage, a Bengals team that you think of as being very good on both lines of scrimmage. They ran the ball at however much they wanted to. That's how they ended up moving the ball at the end of the game. Leonard Williams was a man on fire. The entire defensive line without Sheldon
Make Richardson. That leap, Leonard.
Sheldon Richardson wasn't even there. He'll be back for this game. And they go up against a Bills offensive line who struggled badly against Baltimore last week. So everything for the Jets, I thought, looked almost better than a year ago, except for the one thing that I expect to turn into a pumpkin, just like Kirk Cousins, which is Ryan Fitzpatrick. And he's out there doing Ryan Fitzpatrick things, throwing jump passes, doing weird out-of-control throws, and kind of being more of the Ryan Fitzpatrick I think we'll see this season.
Didn't help that Brandon Marshall didn't show up in this game, targeted seven times, three catches, including a terrible, terrible drop in the final minute when the Jets still had a chance to move down the field and get in field goal range and steal the game back. And then Eric Decker only had two catches he did get in the end zone. But I thought, yes, Fitzpatrick did not look great, and there's reason to be worried about that. The kicker killed him, cost him the 4 points. But I think they played better than Cincinnati, which is a good team.
The Bengals didn't even try to run on them. They were already making their game plan smartly, just throw, throw, throw. And it's not like they
no snacks
protect Dalton.
Can we talk about Darrell Revis?
Sure.
You know, I think – Mark especially, and me, I get annoyed by Rex Ryan, but this is a great quote. I love Rex Ryan. One thing I love about him is how much he respects and appreciates Darrell Revis. And he said, if he's slipping at all as a player, he's coming down from the very tip of Everest. What a great quote.
That is a great quote.
And he has trouble with A.J. Green. Last year, Sammy Watkins at 100%. DeAndre Hopkins, those are the guys he had trouble with. Now we're getting Sammy Watkins at considerably less than 100%. I don't know if the Bills can take advantage of that matchup.
Well, and I look at the Bills last week, and were they able to use Sammy Watkins in that game? And that's been an issue at times in Buffalo in general, where Watkins does not get maxed out the way that A.J. Green does in his better games with the Bengals. The Jets held the Bengals rushing the game to 55 yards, where the Bills last week ran for 2.7 yards per carry.
And they had no Sheldon Richardson in that game. He comes out off suspension for the Jets, so that just makes that team strength even greater. I think the thing with Revis, and it will be a good a real indicator of how nervous the Jets are about how week one went. Let's see if they have him with Watkins alone. If they mix things up, it makes you think that they're really gauging where their number one cornerback is at right now.
I think this is an even bigger – it's a big game for both teams, but it's even bigger for the Bills because I think it's absolutely panic time for the Bills if they go 0-2 with what we've seen out of them. They go backwards 10 yards on their first drive of the season. That's a bad omen. Rex Ryan wants to pound the football. He has a running back who's extremely talented and looks fast, but every time he gets the ball, he just wants to bounce it outside. They have an offensive line that's supposed to be a strength that really got dominated last week. They have a coach who pretends like he's bold and quit at the end of the first half instead of trying to go for a field goal. Just decided to sit on the ball. You're beating our ass so bad, we're not even going to try to score. That's what the Bills were last week. I would be very concerned. They have two good things going for them. Jerry Hughes has looked about as good as a defensive player as I've seen over the last 5 weeks in terms of rushing the passer. And Kyle Williams is back and looked like Kyle Williams last week.
So if the Jets can hang their hat upon the defensive line, which was dominant, and the running game, the Bills are hanging their hat on Jerry Hughes and Kyle Williams?
And a secondary, two good cornerbacks. It's not like their defense played poorly. It made me think, man, if they had all the players that they're missing, you know, Shaq Lawson and Reggie Ragland and Marcel Darius, like, well, Rex might actually have something here, but they don't have those players.
Well, and another,
they have half their defense.
Right, and I think that's fair. Buffalo, you know, we've talked about it for weeks and months. They had a absolute rough preseason. Very few teams could come close to saying the same stuff happened to them. But if you lose this game to the Jets and you're 0-2, it's no different than New York. You go and play the Cardinals and Patriots next. Then you play the Rams. And if you lose that game to the Rams, I got to wonder what happens in Buffalo.
Because well, who knows with the Rams, which Rams team will show up.
I'm just saying.
I see your point.
The Bills have this very similar schedule to the New York Jets, and it is a murderer's row.
Yes, you're absolutely right about that. And Tyrod Taylor, after an offseason of saying this guy deserves to be paid, got to make some more plays this week.
This is a fun game, though. I'll say that. I think
early desperation.
It is. I know we don't like talking about must-win games in week two because they really don't exist. But I think for these two organizations in this AFC East, where you're looking at the Patriots going to go 15-1 or 14-2, it's rough.
I have a Sessler here. The loser of this game is 1-4 after week five.
It makes sense.
You're in a deep hole against a killer schedule, and you're not coming back from that most likely. Everybody got the Jets in this game, or does anybody think the Bills hold home field here?
I'll probably be picking against the Bills every week.
Wow. No, I'm definitely taking the Jets. They're playing such a similar defense to the one that flummoxed Tyrod Taylor last week. He didn't know where the pressure was coming from.
I don't like doing this because I don't want this to happen, and I'm no Bills fan, but I think the Bills are going to win. This is in Buffalo, which is no small thing, and, you know, the occasional Rex Ryan game where he says F you to all his doubters and drops a little bit of a bomb, I think that they're going to play well in this game.
Wouldn't it surprise me? We will see what happens. Tyrod Taylor played well in that Week 17 game against the Jets, played terribly in the first color rush game. So we'll see which one shows up.
One last point about the Bills. You know, Greg mentioned earlier that only two wide receivers caught the ball, Robert Woods and Sammy Watkins. Has to be irritating if you're a Bills fan watching Chris Hogan immediately score a touchdown against the Cardinals, a difference in that game.
Well, they're trying to throw
deep
balls.
I think we predicted this in the summer.
Right, well, they're trying to throw deep balls to Greg Salas.
Before we talk team of ATL, I just want to check in with Mark Sessler, who the last time, if you're a listener of the show, you know, in your mind, Mark has let go, and he's decided to eat all food, fatty-type foods and not do any exercises. He's even he's got the vapors right now, which is something a very heavy-set woman might do.
I haven't always been like this.
Like a Gilbert Grape mom type. but now the audience should know that that has shifted. You've gone away from giving up on your physical appearance and into something even more hardcore, it seems.
Well, I tried to eat all this junk food, and I quite enjoyed it, but I wasn't gaining weight, and I was just feeling ill and feeling angry, and I didn't feel good. So it's not a long-term plan, but I'm on to a new thing.
Who would have thought saw that coming?
That's fair. I don't know. I wasn't thinking it out entirely, but I decided during the middle of that Browns game against the Eagles very early that I would only eat raw foods during the game and with the presumption that Cleveland would win. And when they did not, I said I will continue to eat raw foods alone just raw foods until Cleveland wins.
Here,
play a football game.
Here's the thing about Mark and your diet is that you said before the show started that this raw food diet also is making your body and brain act weird. Is there maybe a middle ground where you could eat a diet that puts you more in an even-keeled space?
No.
Have you ever considered it's not the diet that is the determining factor in all of this?
That I disagree with, Greg. You and I have been through this before. I'm not going to have it happen on a radio show.
I've always been like this. Based on previous lifestyle vows that I've seen from you, Mark, I predict this one lasts 11 days.
That's fair.
That means the Browns
I'll take the
win.
Under.
Into day four. Into day four, by the way.
I'll take the under.
It was making you feel crazy.
Let's move on. Dick Banks said it. This is a very special honor. For the third season, we will be – or fourth season? Third season, we will be picking a team. Fourth season, we'll be picking a team of around the NFL. And what does that mean? That means, Greg, explain to the audience.
It's the team that, in theory, we all are rooting for, that we naturally in 2013 – enjoyed watching the Carolina Panthers early on in the season. We kind of we like the cut of their jib. What is it?
Cut of their jib.
What's a jib?
No one knows.
Something you like the cut of.
Yes, the Panthers in 2013. The Chargers were a pick in 2014. We never really kind of found one that we fell in love with, and we settled on the Chargers.
Week 11, we picked them.
The Cardinals. That's not true. The Cardinals.
And then last season, the Cardinals.
Yes, and. It's probably been less organic since that first season, and it's interesting. We picked the Panthers before they really went on a run and started playing well, and now it's something we meet with Danishes, I believe, that are involved.
What we do is we use the interoffice email system to set aside time in one of the conference rooms. We block off that time. We get bagels, English muffins,
locks,
toast, locks, orange juice, coffee, and other Danishes. And we hammer it out. And why today is important is what we like to do is we like to nominate teams after week one. And that not just tracking the week one, but all through the summer, you factor in all these things. And then after the third week of the season, we will select a team. And I'm not going to get too strict with the rules. If you nominate a team today, it doesn't mean you can't throw somebody else out there at the end of week three.
Right.
But it's not necessarily a great look if you're going to bail on a team that you feel so confident about right now. I would like you to stick with your team, but there should be no rules that you can't go to somebody else before the final week three vote, which the vote must be unanimous.
Hmm. Right.
Absolutely.
Because the Panthers, for instance, I think were well into the season. It was kind of more just after watching them for a while, feeling the vibe.
I think it was after 3 weeks. It was right about when Riverboat Ron had his famous epiphany.
Yes, that definitely checks out memory-wise. So, without further ado, we will now nominate four teams. And one of these teams will likely be the 2016 Team of ATL. I'm sure every front office official and every player in the NFL is listening to this podcast, every finger crossed. Mark, get us going. Who is the first nominee for Team of ATL 2016?
I'm going to read you why I'm picking this team and reveal it near the end, because I think this shows that I have an open mind, and I would just ask the rest of the room to keep an open mind.
Okay.
Here's what my team brings to the table. Number one, a balanced, deep roster, both sides of the ball. Number two, an experienced head coach who knows the division up and down. Number three, a quarterback we can get behind. Number four, a team that plays the kind of football we appreciate in this room. Tough defense, versatile ground game, with a top three receiver to do damage through the air.
I don't like where this is going.
The next one. Number five, this is a sober-minded, middle American franchise supported by a loyal fan base that's been through hell. This dynamic appeals to Greg's desire for down-home pro-U.S. centrist values with a tilt toward laissez-faire economy. That's Number true. Six, this is not a team that will implode by week five, nor is it some fly-by-night operation that plays games in a 72-degree sterile science fiction-like dome. While there's no guarantee of the Super Bowl, they'll be alive and well in December, and they'll bust lips in the rain and snow. I like them. Final point, number seven. We have a chance to say we were on board when this team finally enjoys its elusive moment of glory. And as a bonus, that moment would offer a chance for healing, redemption, and resolution for one of our own, Chris Wessling, because this team is the Cincinnati Bengals.
Wow. Right off the bat, Sessler drops a hammer. The Bengals nominated as the team of ATL. Well, I mean, we need to hear from you first, because is there, Chris Wessling, and people that are not aware, Wes grew up in Cincinnati on the west side as a Bengals fan, decided because of the team's practices and dysfunction, he could no longer support them.
It's a lot deeper than that. But
wrote a dossier in which he broke down all the reasons why he would no longer follow the team or support them, and has since celebrated each of their first-round playoff failures in the last 5 years, a event he calls Westivus. Does that disclude them from having any chance of being the team of ATL?
Well, I would first like to say that, you know, this is Mark at his best, using his imagination. I admire his creativity here. He's thinking outside the box. Well done, Mark. Very well done. I will keep an open mind.
Wow.
But I would say there is very little chance that a team that I loathe and I find amusing. I don't think I can take the Bengals seriously, because they provide me endless hours of entertainment and amusement. Not something that I could get behind, I don't think.
Okay, he says he doesn't think. He's not closing the door, which is a very nice thing of West
to
do.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't cut out your legs from under you here, because we're not voting until week three. He's being honest, though, and you got to respect that. He's being honest.
We could vote. Couldn't we vote next week if we all felt strongly?
Absolutely. Yeah, right. Yeah, okay. But I'm setting the deadline is
got
after
it.
Week.
I respect the vision you have here, where it's a happy ending and there's healing and catharsis for me. Thank you for that.
By the way, to get there,
wow.
I actually
a
picked
vibes.
A team out of the AFC North, which I did something that I would never have done before. So
once,
you know,
once upon a time, a mortal enemy of the Cleveland Browns.
Yes. At this point, Browns have no rivals, so all hail the Bengals.
All right. So that is the first nominee, the Cincinnati Bengals. And I will go next, Wes.
Okay.
And the team I will nominate is – when I'm looking for this, a team to get behind, it has to be a team that is downtrodden in many cases. A team that – and a fan base, this is what I like, that has put up with a lot of garbage, and now things are going in the right direction. And when I think about this team, a proud team, one of the forebearers of the American Football League, a decorated franchise that has seen nothing in many years, but now – through the patience of ownership, which surprised a lot of people, is on the way up. And we saw it in week one, where their head coach, a man maligned in his own ways, he hung some of the biggest Zeppelin you've ever seen.
You notice these onions are sitting on top of the ground.
And I'll tell you what, I'm talking about Jack Del Rio, the man who, with one play call, sent a lightning bolt to the old Zeuser, that is the team of ATL, a team that is looking to change the culture, looking to save the NFL from the likes of the Patriots and all the other teams, the Broncos and the Packers and all these teams, and the Seahawks that are the same five teams that are always in the mix. Here, we're the new kids on the block, and we're ready to shake up the NFL. That's why I have selected as my nominee the exciting, the young, the energetic Oakland Raiders.
A convincing argument, and whether it's intentional or not, really pulls on my historical heartstrings, dating back to when this exercise was more innocent and a fourth down call from Ron Rivera that helped inspire us naturally because he was playing bold.
Great point.
Football. That gets me going. Instead, you know, this exercise has turned ugly, let's be honest at times, in off air, in the office, emotional, where it almost feels like sometimes we're just saying, okay, we'll pick that team just to pick a team. This makes a lot of sense to me. I like it, Dan.
Thank you very much, Greg. That means a lot to me. Any thoughts on the Kissing Cousins?
I know, like, I would be very happy to pick a team like this because of the arc of where we started with the Raiders when this podcast started, where we could not have harsher on them, and for good reasons, but they've grown, and we've grown, and I love the Raiders as a team of ATL.
Great point. That's a great point as well. The coming full circle after being the laughingstock of this podcast. Wes.
There's a few things I would like to see from the Raiders before I jump on board. They're frisky, and I'm intrigued. I like Amari Cooper. Khalil Mack's fun to watch. What else do they have going on defense? They got to do – I need to see Carl Joseph play. I need to see some cornerbacks play well. There's no pass rush in the first week. I think the team of ATL should have some kind of defense, so I want to see that.
We're not looking necessarily for a 12-14.
No, not at all.
I'm not mistaken.
Doesn't even need to be a playoff team, just a fun team to watch.
After growing up in Cincinnati, I want a team with a backbone because I never had one.
Okay, that's certainly fair. I thought they showed a lot of backbone in winning that game in enemy territory, but their defense did not look good. That's very fair. Greg, you are up next. Your nomination for Team of ATL.
Well, I am going to nominate a team. I'm also going to have a point of order after we all go around.
Okay, that's fair.
Just in terms of talking about the rules. I'm big into the rules.
Hitting on the rules, that's important. Rules
I'm not into surprises. I'm into a very simple exercise where you pick the team you are looking forward to watching.
That's a great rule of thought.
That's all I'm looking for. That's all I'm thinking about. And I'm looking forward to watching Jameis Winston not just win me some sandwiches all season, but light up those secondaries in the NFC South and be that sort of very similar to the Raiders in some ways, be that young team for a franchise that has won Super Bowl but has been lost in Mark's wilderness for the last, 10, 12 years. Just an awful group of coaches and everything, and never really felt
that's
like
my wilderness.
Youngry.
It's a great throw.
Well, I just using the word wilderness, I feel like I have to mention your name. Jameis.
That's respect to you, Mark.
Thank you, Greg.
Jameis Winston, Mike Evans, Doug Martin, Charles Sims, throwing Vincent Jackson, Austin Seferian Jenkins. You guys can talk all you want about defense. I want to see a team that's fun to watch and is going to be aggressive, not dinking and dunking and moving the ball down the field like the Bengals sometimes do, but going deep and going bold. And
did
I like
you watch week one?
Well, they did have a nice some nice vertical strikes in week one. And then, you know, on defense, you got Levante David. You got Quan Alexander. It's a team on the come. We'd be ahead of the curve if we picked the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Phrasing?
Yeah. And I think put him on Rushmore.
Irish.
Pick up the chisels. I think that Jameis Winston as the face of a team of ATL, I like that. That guy gets me excited, not just as a player with potential, but also as a personality, a guy people can believe in.
Well, I think Greg knows, based on conversations here and outside of here, that he's taunting a brick wall over on this side of the table.
No, I'm not, because I believe that everyone in this room could have an open mind.
I do have an open mind, and actually I will say that I would be, again, I am probably the most willing to go to anyone's. If three people want something, this is not the beginning and end of my world. I want the team, the group to agree, but here's my issue with the Bucks. A, you'd say you like to watch them. I like what they're about on offense, but I'm going to bring up two things I brought up before. The uniforms.
Give me
a break with the uniforms that I got to get to sit down and get super excited.
This is coming from a Browns fan, by the way.
Oh, no.
The worst uniform in the league now.
I think the Bucks do.
And
Jaguars are worse.
Secondly,
hideous
helmet. Florida
European
sunlight.
Doesn't count because you don't see colors.
That hideous Florida sunlight that streams down on that field.
You're colorblind, Greg.
Colorblind people
you are.
See colors.
Yes, but no.
Everyone out there, it's not a black and white Charlie Chaplin movie out there. Just the tone is awful.
I just like picture always anybody colorblind is like a dog where their sight line is near everyone's knees and you're hearing like black and white everywhere.
Aesthetically is a tough choice for me. That's like to see them
thing.
Another week. Maybe it is weird. I am not a, you know.
This isn't a fashion competition of around the league. It's a football team.
Just one guy's opinion.
The reason you're in trouble with this, Greg, is because Mark's reasoning is not factoring in football at all. There's nothing the Bucks can do right now to change the weather in Florida and their uniforms.
Well,
football players wear?
What's that?
What do football players
uniforms.
Wear? Right. So it does factor in football.
Yeah, but they can't change
it. Yeah, but they can't do anything.
Of course they can.
The players
not for three
can.
Years.
Well, this isn't about just the players.
I thought of, you know, capitulating and politically choosing a team that would have a better chance, but that feels dishonest.
I'm not ruling them out. Those are my issues.
Team that I like.
I'd like to wait. If I'm to remain invested in this product,
yes,
which is a very iffy proposition at best after the past few podcasts where I have been besmirched and dragged through the mud.
Right.
If I'm to remain invested, I would have a little bit of an issue with the Buccaneers because Greg talked about watchability, and no matter how well they play football, they are always going to be in the bottom three teams of watchability for me. I can't get excited about watching a team whose uniforms make me vomit.
It's about me.
You know, Wes, you opened
I never
the
knew you were
there,
such a
way.
Fashion plate. I didn't know you were so concerned with how appearances.
This the nomination process went smoothly until the kissing cousins started getting excited about uniforms.
No, well, I'm excited about uniforms.
Okay, that's been out there. Again, I said I'll keep an open mind. I'm not going to rule anyone out today. I want to see another week of the Bucs. I think they are an interesting football team.
And before we do throw it to Wes, we got to open the kimono. You're upset about some of this team of West TL talk. You don't like it. You think it's unfair. You think you've been dragged through the mud. I think what Greg is getting at is he wants you to keep an open mind and make this a collaborative process and not just your team that we need to go along with. Is that do you understand where maybe that sentiment is coming
from? I absolutely do. And I feel like because when this project started, I was the most invested in the group because I was watching more video than you guys were. So I took some ownership there. And when I stood up against you guys, against the 49ers, which did happen, and we can probably roll the tape, Irish.
I think there's a lot of feeling amongst this group after this game and Tom Sula.
What's with the sound of
about
sound quality?
Some potential team of around the NFL buzz for these 49ers.
Happily would I do this.
Let's think about it.
I give Wes a lot of credit. He's ready to do it right now.
Wrestling. I said I'm willing to consider them, whereas before I wouldn't have believed it.
Let's go around the room. Yes or no? Greg?
Yes.
Dan? Yes. Mark?
Yes. We took way too much time last year.
No.
Oh, Wes.
You guys railroaded me into the Chargers last year, and you will not be forgiven for it.
You're welcome for that, by the way.
That was great.
For being invested and making sure you guys did not make that terrible mistake.
You'd made a good choice. That was good.
That was good.
But we've made lots of good choices with Team of ATL and over the years.
Should we now go around the room and find points where everyone else was wrong on this podcast in the past 3.5 years?
If I start a segment where it's particularly making fun of you or mocking you, I would welcome you to do that.
All right. Listen, Wes, this is what I'm talking about. Wes is sensitive about the situation. He's saying this is not the West TL show.
Well, I'm open to the idea of just abandoning my investment in it.
Well, that was my point of order. Yeah. Just make the team of ATL no more.
That's always Greg's solution to everything.
nothing matters. Let's get
it. It's not that nothing matters. You know, your favorite TV shows, they last 2 or 3 seasons, then they lose some buzz.
Okay, that down.
I did too.
Can we hear Chris Wessling's nominee, please? Greg, that was a terrible job by you.
Wes just agreed with it. That it's if it's not going to be honest,
I'd be open
to
wait a minute.
We could be open to
we
it.
Haven't even hit a point of contention. This seems like we're the most open-minded we've been in all these seasons.
You guys are crazy. Everything was going well, and now we got to.
That's true. Generally, I'd go along with any of them. I was just saying, if we have to pretend that we like a team just to do it, I don't want to make Wes do that.
Okay. Well, then we won't pick a team if we don't all settle on one.
That's fair.
Right.
We don't have to ban the segment. Wes, your nominee.
Well, speaking of keeping an open mind, I would like you – I acknowledge there are issues with the Titans, Mike Mularkey being issue number one. The second half of the season opener in which there were 3 turnovers that caused a very exciting game to turn sour, the other thing. But if you keep an open mind and realize that week 1 is the perfect overreaction time, and let's concentrate on what happened in the first half when Connor Orr is all over our instant messenger saying how fun this team is, and I'm thinking there's so much fun to watch. If Greg's point is the most fun team to watch, the Titans, to me, can be right there with any team in the league.
They need a little more smash mouth and a little less exotic. And I would say that hurt them in the first half of that game, too, throwing fake dives from Mariota to pitchbacks to Derrick Henry on 3rd and 1. And there's a lot of exotic.
Exotic is fun.
Which makes them fun, but not if they're scoring 10 points a game. But I am open-minded. We all were kind of thinking that the Titans were a good pick. They probably wouldn't be in my top 3 or four teams, but I'm kind of like Mark that if it's a team that I look forward to watching, I'm on board.
I like the idea of the Titans. We've talked about that before. I'm glad you didn't abandon the Titans, by the way, after a faulty, you know, opener. I'm glad you didn't, because you got to stick to what you saw, and I don't think that week one's going to decide who they are. I'd be open to it because, you know, your NFC South, Greg, is my AFC South, and I think that there's a lot of fun things happening there. Sign up for the Titans, and I don't need this team to go 14-2 and be in the AFC Championship. It's like, that is not what this is about to me. Like, I want to see good football, but good football sometimes happens with a team that goes 9-7 and has lots of drama too. So,
and there's no reason to panic after week one, but some of the team not winning, the team kind of having, you know, 10 points until the last couple minutes of the game, there are some reasons to be concerned that, oh, maybe this is the Titans still with Mike Mularkey at the helm, and they won't get it together until they have a better structure.
Bit of a Mariota meltdown in that game. But they also could be a team kind of like those Panthers that it wouldn't surprise me if they're a 2-4 team that plays well down the stretch and is fun to take some time to come together.
I would say if it's not unanimous, I wouldn't really be interested in making the Titans the team of ATL anyway.
Does it concern you if we sign up with the Titans and then they flounder that you're going to hear about it all year?
No, doesn't concern me at all.
That's what the block button's for.
I don't think that there's a big caution here, because I'm not going to get on you because the Titans stink.
I think they're going to be fun. I'm confident they're going to be fun to watch, and I think they're going to be more of the team that showed up in the first half than the team that showed up in the second half.
Are there other teams that you kind of circling in your mind?
Well, there's
they're
one.
On the radar. You know, other teams on the West radar that you might support this year in general.
Well,
not just the team of ATL.
There's one that's like every year in my top two or three teams to watch, and we don't nominate them because it would be a shot across Mark's bow. But the Steelers would always be in my top three candidates for team of ATL.
I mean, you want to talk about getting disengaged from the activity.
Right, I get that. I would
not abandon.
By the way, you can watch the Steelers whether the team of ATL or not. So I they are a fun team, there's no doubt.
There are certain teams that I think just have no chance to ever be in this exercise.
The Patriots,
both New York teams, and that's about it.
I think going for an elite team right out of the gate is
weird.
A bit on the nose.
The Seahawks during the Pete Carroll, Russell Wilson, it would feel weird.
All the Seahawks fans are tweeting at us like, what about Seahawks or team of ATL? What else do you want, guys?
I was going to say Browns, but I don't even believe that. I think if the Browns found a quarterback and looked frisky, we'd be into it.
All right. So there you go. The nominees for Team of Around the NFL 2016, the Cincinnati Bengals, the Oakland Raiders, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and the Tennessee Titans.
So nice group of teams.
Now we find out what happens in the next 2 weeks. Nice group of teams.
What if all four lay massive eggs in week two? I mean, just get blown to smithereens.
That's why we left a little wiggle room.
Okay.
You could throw somebody else out there.
I think you could change it later.
But the truth of the matter, in my mind, unless somebody exploded in the next 2 weeks out of nowhere, I would be – if all these teams bombed in the next couple of weeks, we just might not have a team this year. We shouldn't force it.
That would be organic. So we want to be that way.
That's a good way to
look. It should have very little to do with one loss record and who's playing like lights out after 3 weeks, because that's how the Chargers became the team of ATL a couple of years ago. And then they cratered after that.
All right, so that is it for today's show. We will be back Thursday night, late Thursday night, where you'll hear our preview of all the Week 2 games and also our recap. We'll start the show with our recap of Jets-Bills. And after that game, I'll either be gleeful and maybe I will send a mess. Ooh, excuse me. We don't use that word around here. A message that, hey, guys, I don't mind talking about the game. Or I will be drunk and depressed in a dark room in my house. Could go either way.
It sounds like there's something at stake for your immediate family here as well.
Very true. So,
by the way, if you're listening now, we are going to do a live Periscope of Sunday's podcast. I just want to, everyone that listens to our podcast, if you like that, it's probably going to be during Sunday Night Football, so it's another screen. But if you want to watch us tape our podcast live, the NFL official social media account will be sending that out this Sunday night.
Very good. So, yes, make sure if you could support us with that as we take on the world. I mean, you're either with us or you're against us, but we're forging on. And that's it for today's show. Until then, this is Dan Hansa signing off for Quiet Storm, the mailman, the boss, and Big Irish behind that glass. Till Thursday!